Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is a drive. Text line 69306. I'm happy I just got in my car in time to hear the tail end of the Buzz Killington Harrison hour. I mean, that's heavy as the head that wears the crown, you know? I just want us to have honest conversations about the Chiefs quarterback. You know, I got high expectations.
Buzz,
you know?
Killington Harrison. I kind of like that.
This girl I used to date, she used to call me Killington all the time. Buzz Killington all the time. It didn't work out, so.
Killed the mood in maybe, the bed or lot or what?
Maybe she was probably the Buzz Killington. We got a busy 5 o'clock hour. We're giving away $1,000 in our national cash contest. You have a chance to win $1,000. We're giving you a pair of Royals tickets, which some might deem as a prize. Others may not at this point of their season. And you know what? I'm going to be positive about Patrick Mahomes the entire time. I mean, I feel like I'm pretty positive when I say I think he can be a better version of Matt Stafford. I feel like that's pretty positive, but if you don't think he's going to be Brett Favre, that's obviously not good enough for the text line, who is still mocking me for earlier. I misspelled one of the code words. Let's get into the hits.
These are the biggest stories of the day in Kansas City.
I have been waiting for that moment all my life.
We talk about them every day at 5 o'clock.
The hits, number one.
Power's about to go out here at 610 Sports Radio.
It's all those hot takes I've been giving about Patrick Mahomes about to short the radio station out.
All right.
It is like eerily quiet for some reason.
It looks weird outside too. I don't know.
This might be the last hour of the show, just not even by choice.
Ever.
We might die.
Yeah. No show tomorrow.
that's a nice way to get a 4-day weekend.
Yes,
we
it
died.
Is. We are out of here. OTAs today, the Chiefs finally addressing the media after practicing all week and being closed off to the media. You miss Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, any of the team, all live right here on 610 Sports Radio, the only station that carried those guys live today in Kansas City. Justin Houston says he and Eric Berry need to stay healthy.
I just pray we both stay healthy. It's been a while that we both have a healthy, complete season. So that's what I would like to see this year from both of us. Both of us be healthy all year.
A healthy Justin Houston and a healthy Eric Berry certainly can make a big difference for this Chiefs defense. Eric Berry also spoke for 18 seconds. Let's see how many cliches he can
talk for more than that
in those 18 seconds.
Put in work. You know,
that's one.
Like, it's injuries are injuries, but
that's
how you
two.
Bounce back from them. I mean, he stuck to it.
That's three.
Endured the process.
Four.
He came back just fine. So.
Five.
I'm not too concerned with it. I'm going to just stick to the process.
Seven.
Make sure I give 100% every
Eight.
Day, conquer each day, one day at a time, and just come back like I'm supposed to.
10 and 18 seconds. And if you're counting at home, that's a cliche every 1.8 seconds or so. So Chiefs OTAs in the books for week one in the offseason training program.
I don't think we've given enough credit maybe to the presence of Eric Berry in our conversations about the defense. I think the last time we saw a healthy Eric Berry, he was one of the 10 best defensive players in the NFL. You are adding that player back still relatively in his prime to your NFL team. I think that changes things for everybody. Think about last season. What would we say was the best defensive effort from the Chiefs? I think it's the first game against the Patriots, in which they made Tom Brady look pretty pedestrian and human, which is a very, very difficult thing to do. And they did the exact same thing to Rob Gronkowski, who I think is the greatest tight end of all time. And that was a lot to do with Eric Berry on the defense. If you get Eric Berry back and he's healthy, I think that changes things for Justin Houston. And all you need the Chiefs defense to do with the offense I think they can have is just be middle of the pack. Be middle of the road. If the Chiefs can have the 17th best defense next year, they got a chance to win 11 games. Because I think they're going to be top eight offensively.
First of all, Tony Gonzalez is the greatest tight end of all time. Get the hell out of there with that Rob Gronkowski take. It's either Eric Berry or it's Eric Murray if Eric Berry isn't healthy, which leaves you with a secondary of Fuller, Murray, Sorensen, and Nelson since Marcus Peters is now a member of the Rams. So You absolutely need Eric Berry to stay healthy. I think that you could argue Eric Berry is not only the most important, but when healthy, the best player on this defense. And I think that he's going to make a huge impact. And he better, frankly, because as good as I think that this offense is going to be, and I've said several times that I think that this could be the best offense the Chiefs have ever had, I think it's going to look very Dick Vermeil-ish. Last year, the Rams led the NFL with 29.9 points per game. I think the Chiefs can score 30 this year. Even if Patrick Mahomes isn't what we expect him to be, I still think that the offense can be all-worldly. That's the positive. Here's the negative. I think the defense is going to be just as bad as the offense is going to be good. If Justin Houston doesn't look like the 22.5 sack Justin Houston, and he looks like the Justin Houston we've seen the last couple of seasons, and if Eric Berry isn't 100% healthy, I think this could be a bottom five defense in the league, and this team better hope they score 30 points a game if they're going to win double-digit games.
Number two.
The hits are brought to you by the Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for a mostly not Jewish city, is now open in the Crossroads, and is the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. Vern's pregame show coming up in about 1 hour from right now. First pitch, a little over 2 hours away, as the Royals are down in Arlington to take on the Texas Rangers. Royals coming off winning 2 of 3 in St. Louis. Rangers 20-31. Danny Duffy taking the hill, 1-6 with a 6.88 ERA. He is going to be opposed by, I'm going to go with Austin Bibbins Dirks, is the pitcher for the Texas Rangers, as the lights continue to flicker here in the 610 studios. Royals underdogs, -1.5, -105, though, so not much of an underdog tonight when we're officially allowed to legally gamble on sports. An over-under of 10, though some runs down in Arlington tonight between the Royals and Rangers, the first of four, all right here on 610 Sports Radio.
Man, I was born and raised in Missouri, and I've spent every day of my life at least living in the state of Missouri. At some point, man, seeing is believing. If you're Danny Duffy, you got to show me you're going to go out there and have a good start. Over his last six starts, his ERA is 9 over 30 innings. He's given up 30 earned runs in his last six starts. There's no reason to think that Danny Duffy's going to go out there and have a good start today until he doesn't. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's sports. Anything can happen. But at some point, seeing is believing with Danny Duffy. He's not talking like someone that thinks he's going to go out there and pitch really well in his next start. Again, seeing is believing. You got to show me, Doug.
I'm with you. Yeah, with the Duff man, it seems like it's between the ears as much as it is with the arm. His ERA has ballooned all the way up to 6.88. He's allowing over one hit per inning. It's been a tumultuous season for him, but it's not just Duffy. The entire team ERA is 5.39, and this might be the most glaring stat because we're more than a quarter of the way done with this season. Sometimes in baseball, a guy will be hitting 600 for the first couple of weeks, and you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt. But at this point, the statistics are kind of starting to prove out to show what you actually are as a team, and the Royals are allowing their opponents to hit 282. That is awful. If you continue with an ERA of 5.4 and your opponent's hitting 282, it's going to get worse before it gets better, and right now it's pretty bad. We're talking about a team that's 20 games under 500.
Number three.
The big story yesterday was the new NFL policy on the national anthem. Donald Trump obviously speaking overnight. We've avoided that for 3 hours, and we are going to continue to do so. But Seth Wickersham of ESPN, he was the one who broke the Tom Brady, TB12, Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft stuff.
Was a great story.
Great story, last November or so. Was on
it was later than that. It was like right
December?
Before the right before the playoff run, remember?
In the holiday season, we'll call it. Seth Wickersham.
Holiday season is the perfect
broke
way
that story on the New England Patriots. Well, he was on Outside the Lines today with the bearded Bob Lee and had this to say about the NFL owners taking a quote vote on the new NFL anthem policy.
So I'm told no by people in the room, which
not
is interesting.
Not an official vote.
Yeah, for this thing that, you know, look, this has been going on since September. They've been talking about some sort of resolution. They, usually when they have, you know, official votes, there's a process that they go through. With this one, I think that they knew how people were going to vote. They had they had essentially polled it, and they didn't do an official vote.
And you want to know why NFL franchises don't love us back? Seth Wickersham, that audio courtesy of Outside the Lines.
I don't really have a take on this as much as I have a question. Can we guess the last time the NFL got a PR situation right? 10, 15 years ago? Ray Rice, Ezekiel Elliott, all the other various domestic violence issues have happened in the NFL, how they've handled the Breast Cancer Awareness Month. If you did not know the story and why I'm putting that in there, a story came out a couple years ago that the NFL keeps 99% of the proceeds from the breast cancer awareness stuff, and they keep one, or and they give away 1% to charity. They've mishandled the anthem, how they've handled CTE and concussions, how they've handled the catch rule, how they handled the replacement refs a couple years ago. That the only reason they went back to the other refs is because of the terrible call on Monday Night Football, and we all mocked the integrity of the league when that happened. What was the last PR situation that the NFL got right? Tell me what it was, because I'd love to see what it was, because they get these things terribly wrong every single time.
I said the Royals were 20 games under 500. They're actually 17 games under 500.
Tomato, tomato.
I also said that they're allowing their opponents to hit 282. For the record, the Royals only have two guys that are hitting 282, John Jay and Jorge Soler.
Who cares?
All right. Yeah, tomato, tomato.
I'll move on, Bruce.
They're not good.
As far as the whole NFL thing goes, man, the timing correlates with when Paul Tagliabue stepped down and turned over the reins to Roger Goodell. It's kind of like we were talking about Trump earlier, right? He says that his dad gave him $1 million or $2 million. He turned it into whatever billion. Is that impressive? Sure. But to me, I'm much more impressed with a guy who started off with 10 cents and turned it into $2 million. My point is this. The product was excellent when Paul Tagliabue was a commissioner. He turned it over to Roger Goodell, and since then, it's been like 12, 13 years Goodell's been the commissioner. Since then, almost every single move that he's made has made the sport worse, has made the sport less popular, and has made the viewing go way, way, way down. At this point, to go to an NFL game, some people are turned off by the parking situation. Some people are turned off by the security and the frisking. Some people are turned off by the kneeling of the national anthem. Some people are turned off by the high price of the beer. Some people are turned off by the bathroom lines. But when you talk about all these different issues adding up, it starts to make a whole lot more sense of why people just sit on their ass on their couch and watch games on TV instead of actually going out and dealing with everything that is an NFL Sunday.
And that concludes the hits for today. I was asked a question by Josh Vernier a couple days ago, and I thought he made a really good point and asked a really good question. He said, in Patrick Mahomes' rookie season, what would you classify to be a good rookie season from Mahomes? And I realized then that I had never put actual numbers beside it because I think Mahomes is going to have a really, really good career. So on the text line asked, why don't you say great? I think the odds suggest you're not going to be great. I think he can be a really, really good quarterback, and now we're just kind of parsing words here. But that's neither here nor there. What would we classify as a good season from Patrick Mahomes' rookie year? So I put some numbers behind it. I think if Patrick Mahomes completes 60% of his passes, I am a firm believer that 60% is the threshold you need to be at for us to consider you a good passer in the NFL. With the way offenses currently are run, with the schemes that we see, it is not that hard if you are a good passer to complete 60% of your passes. As a little bit of a case study, last year, 25 quarterbacks in the NFL completed 60% of their passes of guys that qualify.
I think Alex was like 70%.
It's not that hard to do at this point. I think that's the threshold of a good passer in the league. Because the guys that threw less than 60% last season that qualified, you wouldn't consider good passers. Andy Dalton, Mitch Trubisky, Cam Newton, Trevor Siemian, Jacoby Brissett, C.J. Beathard, and DeShone Kizer were the guys that qualified that completed less than 60% of their passes last year. Man, those guys aren't good passers. So 60% needs to be the threshold in which I would like to see for one Patrick Mahomes. 20 touchdown passes. 20 touchdown passes is a good number for you to throw at least a benchmark in your rookie season. Last season, over half the league of guys that qualified threw at least 20 touchdown passes last season. That's a good starting point. I'm not saying you got to throw 30 next season. I'm not saying you got to throw as many as Alex Smith. But if you're a quarterback that I think is going to have the weapons that Patrick Mahomes will have around him, a baseline of throwing 20 touchdown passes is very fair to me. And I would say 14 or less interceptions, 13 or less interceptions. I don't want to see your interceptions in the 15, 16s or higher. If we're looking at a season in which Mahomes completes 61% of his passes, 22 touchdown passes, 13 interceptions, I would consider that a good rookie season for Mahomes, and one you could be really optimistic about, and then one to build on for year three, year four, and beyond.
While we're playing the comparison game, you're talking about 20, 22, 23 touchdowns. That's about 1.5 touchdowns per game. Nobody's going to write home about that, but that's okay for a rookie quarterback. A couple of comparisons. Last year, Deshaun Watson, a guy who had, before he got hurt, he was on pace to have the best rookie quarterback season in the history of the NFL, better than even Dak Prescott had a couple of years before. He was on pace for, I believe, 38 or 39 touchdowns. And that's a very, very lofty number that nobody expects Patrick Mahomes to have his first year out the gates. Then you brought up the 14 interceptions. There's no way that this dude only throws 14 interceptions, and here's why. Maybe the most NFL-ready rookie quarterback in the history of a game, a guy that was groomed his entire life to play the position, Peyton Manning, his rookie season, 26 touchdowns. That's good to go along with 28 interceptions. So I think that it's a pipe dream to think that coming out the gates as a rookie, our guy, Patty Cake Shake and Bake, is going to throw half the interceptions that Peyton Manning threw as a rookie. Not going to happen.
I think using Peyton Manning, a guy that his rookie season was in 1998, to me is just a little bit of a flawed argument. I mean, Carson Wentz did it. I mean, we can find recent examples of guys that played 16 games that were good quarterbacks that have gone on to be good quarterbacks. We'll see what happens with Carson Wentz coming back from the injury that threw less than interceptions than Peyton Manning did his first career, his first season in the NFL. Again, I'm not saying that Mahomes is going to throw 30 interceptions this season. I think you know there's going to be some mistakes and there's going to be some things that happen. I just look at comparable guys in their NFL career. I think Derek Carr's rookie season is a very good benchmark to use for Patrick Mahomes. In Derek Carr's rookie season, which was in 2014 at age 23 years old, he completed 58% of his passes, 58.1%. 21 touchdown passes and 12 interceptions. That seems like a very realistic rookie season for Patrick Mahomes.
I think that he will put up numbers like that. And I think that what Patrick Mahomes has in his corner, he's got more offensive weapons at his disposal than maybe any quarterback in the NFL today. I mean, Tom Brady doesn't have as many weapons. Carson Wentz doesn't have as many weapons. The best teams in the NFL don't have as good of skill position players on the offensive side of the ball as the Kansas City Chiefs do. The huge question mark is, of course, that rookie quarterback. But I don't think there's ever been a rookie quarterback, quote-unquote, first-year quarterback, that's had a top-five running back, the number one tight end, and you could probably argue two top 10 to 20 wide receivers, Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill. The only thing that I think this guy's going to have the trouble with is living up to the hype, because the expectation in this city for a guy who we've only seen play one regular season game, which was against the Denver Broncos backups, boy, we've put a lot of weight on this guy's shoulders right away.
Text line 69306, by your standards, why don't you look up Aaron Rodgers, his rookie season, since he didn't start his first year in the NFL. Aaron Rodgers' rookie season, he was 25 years old. He sat for three seasons, as you know. He completed 63.6% of his passes, 4,000 yards, 28 touchdown passes, and 13 interceptions. I would consider that a great first season for any NFL quarterback. I'm just going into this with, I think, realistic expectations. I understand with Mahomes, we don't really operate in realism, and he needs to throw 30 touchdown passes with seven interceptions. But I look at a guy like Carson Wentz, who took a pretty big jump from 1AA football to then playing in the NFL and playing 16 games, and look at the career that he had, or the start that he had to his career. And then the huge jump he took in year two, where I think if Carson Wentz doesn't tear his ACL, I think Carson Wentz was going to win MVP in his second year in the NFL. I'm looking at Mahomes, is he should be a little bit further along. He should be a little bit further advanced than where he was. I look at Andrew Luck's rookie season. He completed 54% of his passes, 23 touchdown passes, 18 interceptions. Now, I don't think Mahomes is going to be asked to do as much as Andrew Luck has. Luck's never had the running games, never had the consistent weapons, certainly didn't have the offensive line to really be good from the jump. Worse situation he came into than one that Patrick Mahomes is. I'm just trying to look at a pretty comparable year as a benchmark of what does Mahomes need to do in season one? Because I think all the expectations we have, I don't know if there's many Chiefs fans that think in year one he's going to be a Pro Bowl guy or an All-Pro guy. I think the expectation for that comes in year two, year three, when he's a little bit further down the line. But where are we starting the expectations at? That's where I'm starting it at. You guys can determine where you're going to start it at. 60% completion percentage, because if you look at the guys last year that didn't do that, not guys I would say are great passers. If you throw more than 20 touchdown passes, over half the league did it last year, guys that qualified the NFL. Certainly I want him to be upper half when it comes into touchdown passes. And if he throws 13 interceptions, I can live with that in year one. I just think because of offenses and how they developed in short passes, and certainly he can rely on a running game, which not a lot of other rookie quarterbacks can do. There's no reason for Mahomes to have 20 interceptions this season. I just think that Mahomes and Reed can find ways to scheme him where he won't have those kind of interception problems.
It's one thing to talk about these individual expectations and statistics and what we think Patrick Mahomes is going to do if he stays healthy and the weapons that he has around him, but I think the one statistical category that most Kansas City Chiefs fans are in agreement upon is this. The win-loss total that Patrick Mahomes as a rookie quarterback, let's say he is Aaron Rodgers and he has a 27 touchdown, 12 interception. Let's say he's more average like Andrew Luck was or one of these other guys that you've mentioned. He still has to go out there and win double-digit football games. He still has to take this team to the postseason, and he has to go out there and win a postseason game in his first year is the expectation from Kansas City Chiefs fans, because if that's not your expectation, then why didn't you just keep Alex Smith? You had another option. I get it, because he was going to cost you a lot of money. But heading into next season, if Alex Smith was your quarterback, everybody's expectation would be the team should be as good, if not better, than they were the year before. Why would that not be your expectation? Every year since he's been paired with Andy Reid in Kansas City, they've won double-digit games, they've won the division in the last couple of years, and been to the playoffs 4 out of 5 seasons. Why should we change our expectations as fans just because you've got a rookie quarterback?
Spectre, I'm curious on your stance on that. Because maybe I am in the minority when it comes to this topic. I don't care if the Chiefs make the playoffs this season or not. I care if they're really bad this season. But I don't care if they make the playoffs or not. This year is not about 2018. Or Patrick Mahomes is not about 2018. It's about being able to capitalize.
Try selling that to Travis Kelce. Try selling that to Sammy Watkins. Try selling that to Justin Houston and Eric Berry. These guys that are in the prime of their career right now.
Agree. But I guess I'm saying is, we know there are some teams that are Super Bowl or bust this season. I don't think that's the Chiefs yet. Is it going to happen in the next 3 years? I consider there's not Super Bowl or bust window, but they need to be in a position to win a Super Bowl while Mahomes is on his rookie contract.
Absolutely.
We still got 3 years left, or I guess 4 years. I haven't played this season yet. So I'm saying is in year one, if it's just get acclimated to the offense, hey, in season one, are there reasons to be excited in season one? That's all I care about. Now, next year in 2019, I will sing a completely different tune if we see Mahomes is good. I'll be anticipating the Carson Wentz jump. Carson Wentz had a good rookie season and then jumped to be a guy who I thought could win MVP, and we know the Eagles won the Super Bowl. So next year is when my expectations start for everything that you're saying. I'm just saying in year one, I'm perfectly fine if they finish 9-7, the defense isn't where it needs to be, but we see you got pieces on offense to really go do something. Go make a couple free agent acquisitions and then do something in year two of Patrick Mahomes being the starting quarterback. I'm just not holding them to the playoff or bust philosophy in year one of Patrick Mahomes the same way I would be if it was year six of Alex.
You see, to me, they're not mutually exclusive. You're saying I'm willing to give up this first year, first quote-unquote full year of him being the quarterback of the Chiefs for the future. And 2 or 3 years down the line, I expect expectations to be and results. Super Bowl, AFC Championship game, that type of thing. I would say they're not mutually exclusive. Why can't this team win double-digit games next year, be a 10, 11, 12-win football team? And when I say next year, I mean this upcoming season. And then also take the jump the year after that. So I expect as a rookie, my expectation, sports machine right here, May whatever today is, I'm telling you, I think that Patrick Mahomes' season will be considered a disappointment if this team doesn't win a playoff game based on the fact that they've been to the playoffs 4 out of the last 5 years and have been unable to do that.
Text line 69306, CDOT. So you're saying long-suffering Chiefs fans will have to suffer one more year? No. It's your quarterback in the first season. Like maybe I'm the only one not taking the same crazy pills as everybody else. Like, we're holding Patrick Mahomes in year one to the same expectation.
We saw Dak Prescott. We saw Deshaun Watson. Why can't our guy be that guy?
Dak Prescott didn't win a playoff game his first year.
He took us, what were they, 13-3? We'll take that.
And they lost in the And they lost their first game, which everybody tells me is the worst thing in the world that can happen. Andrew Luck didn't win a playoff game. It's like, we can look at other great quarterbacks or guys that have been really good. Carson Wentz didn't win. I'm just not holding them to that in year one. Year two, if we're saying playoff or bust for Mahomes and they got to win one, I'm rolling with you. I'm on board. You got to hold them to that expectation in year three with only 3 years left in that rookie deal. But year one, we're holding them to that they got to go 12-4 and win a playoff game. I just think that's a very unrealistic expectation for a team that's changing quarterbacks to a young guy. It's not like they got Kirk Cousins. It's not like they got Case Keenum and they're the Broncos. You can hold them to expectation. Man, It's a 22-year-old quarterback that we've seen play a game, well, and we've seen a couple of throws in the preseason. I'm just not holding him to the same mentality that I was holding him to when they had Alex Smith.
Here's the difference. You're talking about a bunch of other rookie quarterbacks to compare him to, which makes sense because this guy's basically a rookie quarterback. All of those other examples have the same thing in common. Their team sucked. They were high draft picks. I know that you know, but we'll tell everybody out there. That's how it works. If your team sucked the year before, you get a high draft pick. Most of the time you go out there and you draft the best quarterback. That's not how the Chiefs ended up with Patrick Mahomes. They were an 11-win football team the year before. They went out there and traded up to get this guy, mortgaged the draft for the next year to eyeball their quarterback. So we can't compare his situation as a quote-unquote rookie first-year quarterback to all other rookie quarterbacks because it's just not the same parameters.
During the commercial break, I'd really like to see your list of teams you feel have to win a playoff game in 2018. And I would guess everyone you're going to name has had their quarterback for at least 5 years. Every team you're going to name has at least had an, I guess maybe not the Eagles, because they, but certainly a different example. I'd be curious to know that list because I'm going to either assume it's a QB that's been there for a little bit or the established QBs in the NFL that we're holding to that level of expectation. We did a Twitter poll yesterday where we asked a question. Who was the best draft pick in the Carl Peterson era? Was it Derek Thomas or was it Tony Gonzalez? And we got the opinions of people that played in the NFL. But during the commercial break, we'll give you a chance to win a pair of Royals tickets. Whenever you hear this drop.
Good afternoon.
Whenever you hear this drop.
Good afternoon.
One more time.
Good afternoon.
Whenever you hear that during the commercial break, be caller number 6 to 913-576-7610. And we'll give you that chance to win a pair of tickets. And coming up on the other side, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in the National Cash Contest. We got a busy 5:30 on the drive. It's your chance to win 1,000 on the 30s in our National Cash Contest. Text the word DONUT, D-O-N-U-T, DONUT, to 72881, and that's the $1,000 national code word in the National Cash Contest. 610 Sports Radio is the only sports radio station in Kansas City giving you a chance to win up to $12,000 each weekday. All you got to do is listen in on the 30s from 7A to 7P. You have one more chance to win today at 6:30. But why not try to win right now? Complete rules and listings over at 610sports.com. A couple more times for those of you in the back that are hard of hearing.
What?
Donut. D-O-U-N. Or, oh, my. I was about to misspell another.
Honey.
H-O-N-E.
Honey.
I was about to misspell another word. Now I'm thinking about it. I'm so nervous at the plate right now. D-O-N-U-T. D-O-N-U-T. Donut.
This dude.
Play it one more time, Spec. Oh, my goodness. I'm now thinking about it. I'm nervous.
You have every letter of the alphabet in your name, and you can't spell the word donut or honey.
I'm nervous.
You
I'm
did
thinking
pass
about
the
it.
Third grade, right?
I messed up earlier, and now I'm thinking about misspelling the word. And then when you think about doing something wrong, then you do something wrong, and it goes really terrible. The word is donut. D-O-N-U-T.
There you go.
Is how you would spell the word donut in this. Hopefully someone wins it. Hopefully you were amused. I got tears in my eyes. I can't spell anything today.
We learned that in third grade when we learned cursive handwriting, which, by the way, I think that was the last time we ever used cursive handwriting.
It was terrible.
The hell they teach us that.
So yesterday on the show, we had a Twitter poll. And the Twitter poll was, who was the better draft pick from Carl Peterson? Was it Derek Thomas or Tony Gonzalez? It came up because Tony Gonzalez is going into the Chiefs Hall of Fame in the Ring of Honor. Obviously, very deserved. Tony Gonzalez is one of the best tight ends of all time. I'd argue second all time behind Rob Gronkowski. I don't argue with the text line today, though. So we asked this question, and I said Tony Gonzalez. And the basis of my argument is there are people that would make the argument that Tony Gonzalez is the greatest tight end of all time. I'm not one of those people, but there are people that would make the argument. No one makes the argument that Derek Thomas is the greatest linebacker of all time. Certainly an all-time great. The greatest defensive player in Chiefs history. But no one would make the argument that he's the best player at his position. I'm not arguing positional value, because if you're telling me, would I rather have peak J.J. Watt or peak Von Miller or peak Gronk, all right, I'll take Von Miller. I'll take J.J. Watt. They impact the game in a different kind of way. That's not the question here. It's who's the better player that was drafted for the Chiefs. I would argue Tony Gonzalez. Another big point I make for Tony Gonzalez, which isn't fair to Derek Thomas given his passing, but it is when we're in the context of talking careers. We know how Tony Gonzalez's career ended. Tony Gonzalez, from the time he got in the league, in 1996 to the time he decided to hang up his cleats and walk away from the game of football was always healthy. Football is a game of attrition. It is a game in which you are not built to play every single Sunday. Tony Gonzalez was the exception behind it. We also get, I guess, the benefit of this, of knowing how Tony Gonzalez's career ended, but not the benefit of knowing how Derek Thomas ended career. I make the Aaliyah comparison. I don't know how Aaliyah's career ends up. Maybe Aaliyah goes on to be Beyonce and one of the greatest entertainers of all time. Maybe she goes on to be Ashanti, who had a really good musical career, but certainly not Beyonce. But she's always frozen in time because she was in the peak of her career. Derek Thomas is a little bit of the same way. Maybe Derek Thomas is Justin Houston. Justin Houston, great pass rusher. He had 9.5 sacks last season. I don't look at him in the same category as Von Miller and J.J. Watt and those guys anymore. I don't know how you could, just based on the last couple of seasons and his inability to stay healthy. That certainly could have happened to Derek Thomas. So Derek Thomas, a great player, and in no way am I trying to disparage Derek Thomas's legacy memory. He's the greatest defensive Chiefs player of all time. He's one of the greatest pass rushers of all time. But the context of this conversation, who's the better player that was drafted by Carl Peterson? I'm answering Tony Gonzalez.
I hear what you're saying with your Aaliyah comparison, and same thing with John Lennon, same thing with JFK. These people that get their life cut short, it seems like we maybe make them out to be better than they were possibly. And you're right. Who's to say that they weren't going to go on to be an all-time great? Now, let me school you here for a second. You were talking about Tony Gonzalez and his games played and how he was never hurt. Derek Thomas played in the NFL for the Kansas City Chiefs between 1989 and 1999, a 10-year career in which he played 16 games, 15 games, 16 games, 16 games, 16 games, 16 games, 15 games, and 16 games. So he was a guy that was always out there also. You're going to compare the numbers and the position and say that Tony Gonzalez is the greatest tight end of all time, or you would argue Rob Gronkowski, whatever, we're splitting hairs there. I would say the reason that you can only bring up Rob Gronkowski and bring up Shannon Sharp and maybe a couple of other guys, Antonio Gates, is because the era of the offensive tight end being used like a wide receiver, putting up statistics, has only been around since Tony Gonzalez got into the NFL. We're not comparing him to the linebacker position, which has been important for the last, well, since the beginning of the NFL. 16 seasons Tony Gonzalez played in the NFL, which was 6 more years of compiling stats than Derek Thomas was able to. Not to mention, Derek Thomas, you brought up the argument that Tony Gonzalez is the best at his position, maybe all time. I'm not going to argue that. But for a 5, 6, 7, 8 year period, I think you could argue that Derek Thomas was the, if not the, one of the top 2 or 3 elite linebackers in the entire NFL. And then you brought up that his life was cut short. I'm not saying that Derek Thomas had a lot of good NFL years left. His last 3 years in the NFL, he had 10 sacks, 12 sacks, and then 7 sacks in his last regular full season. But if Derek Thomas played another 2, 3, 4 years in a Chiefs uniform, retires as a Kansas City Chief, he would go down as the greatest Chief of all time and most likely on the short list with one of the best NFL defensive players ever. So, as we're splitting hairs, I think that Derek Thomas is the right answer to the question, not to mention he has the individual single-game sack record of 7 sacks in one game, and then a stat that's never going to be broken. His senior year at Alabama, Derek Thomas had 27 freaking sacks.
So we talked to a lot of different people whose opinions I certainly trust on said topic. This is our guy Matt Miller. We asked him the question, who is the better player that Carl Peterson drafted? Was it Derek Thomas or Tony Gonzalez?
This is one of the hardest questions I've ever been asked. I have to go with Derek Thomas, though. Maybe it's like a generational thing, but when I grew up playing football, I remember seventh grade football being a defensive end and wanting to be that guy who went and got quarterbacks because of Derek Thomas. And just I think, you know, the line from Lawrence Thomas to DT, now you see it with Von Miller and Khalil Mack and all these athletic outside edge rushers. It's not taking anything away from Tony Gonzalez. He's fantastic. But I think Derek Thomas is one of the 2 or 3 best outside linebackers to ever play the game.
So that's our guy Matt Miller at NFL Draft Scout with Bleacher Report, certainly looking at it from a different perspective. Here's the former player perspective. This is what Sean Barber had to say in our poll question.
Oh, Derek Thomas. First of all, he's a defender. First of all defensive guys hold a higher glorification, higher whatever you want to call it, than any offensive guys. Second of all, because I believe Derek Thomas is a guy who changed the league, changed the way you could defend, the way you could block a defensive end, an edge rusher. Totally, him and Lawrence Taylor pretty much were the two guys that defined that stand-up rush outside linebacker position. T. CG is a all-time great. He's probably one of the two greatest tight ends to ever play the game. But I would go with Derek Thomas as my all-time Chiefs greatest draft pick.
Text line 69306. It's been a while since I've, you know, blocked somebody on the text line for just having a terrible opinion. I tell people all the time, I will only block you if you're racist or homophobic. You can curse on the text line. I mean, I don't really like it if you curse at me on the text line, but that's not block worthy in my opinion. Text line 69306. Jared Allen was the greatest player that Carl Peterson ever drafted. He had more sacks than Derek Thomas. If that's your opinion, you don't deserve to text the show anymore.
I mean, it's neither racist or homophobic. You just think it's dumb enough to be blocked?
I mean, that's as bad as the take that the guy said that Coming to America is a terrible movie and not that funny. That is an equally bad opinion. Jared Allen's not one of the five best players in the world. What are you talking about? He's a good player. I'm not trying to disrespect Jared Allen, but let's be honest here. Come on now. That's a blockable opinion. That's a blockable opinion.
Yeah, and Jared Allen, certainly no Percy Snow.
Just yes, from a statistical standpoint, Derek Thomas had 126.5 and Jared Allen had 43.
Okay, I'm just passing what the text line had to say.
Just 80 less. So close. But only like 10 seasons short.
Just to stick up for the texture, I think he was referring to overall. Because Jared Allen's time with the Vikings, he very well may have. Because I think they're both top 10 all-time in sacks.
Yeah, Jared Allen has 136.
Close. Very close. Very similar.
Except for the fact that he had 80 less sacks as a Chief, and that's touché. What we're talking about.
Ah, touche.
So, yeah, go ahead. I'll go do it if you want to concentrate on the show.
Okay, but then doesn't that bring the Tony Gonzalez argument into it a little bit, and we have to take out his stats from his last five seasons when he was on the Atlanta Falcons? No?
Okay. I mean, I don't think you need the Tony Gonzalez Atlanta Falcons argument to make that he's the second greatest tight end of all time.
I think this is, would you rather spend a night with Beyonce or Jessica Alba in your case? One's fine, thank you.
No, I can't argue that. This is what Bill Moss had to say on this question.
Great question. Great question. DT was a game changer. There's no question. I mean, Derek Thomas won games by sacking the quarterback, safeties, strip fumble, turning the ball over, giving it to the offense on the 10-yard line going in. Tony was an unbelievable player going to the Hall of Fame. Most catches for any tight end in the NFL. But Derek Thomas changed the course of the game.
And last one we'll play for you guys. This is what Joel Thorman of Arrowhead Pride, lifelong Chiefs fan, had to say on this. Who was the better player drafted by Carl Peterson? Was it Derek Thomas or Tony Gonzalez?
It's a tough choice because both are Hall of Famers or in Tony's case, a future Hall of Famer. But Tony Gonzalez is the answer here, and that's because he's not just a great draft pick. He's the greatest pick ever at his position. He's the greatest tight end in NFL history, and Derek Thomas is one of the handful of the very, very best pass rushers of all time, but Tony Gonzalez is, you know, the best tight end of all time, and up there is one of just the best overall receivers of all time. So I think considering his numbers and considering that he revolutionized that entire position, Tony Gonzalez is the answer here.
I love Thorman, but I think he's wrong only because guys have been rushing the quarterback since the very first football game ever played. The tight end position, as far as a glorified wide receiver,
it certainly has evolved.
I'd say the timing for Tony Gonzalez was perfect. He came out of Cal, was a rookie for the Chiefs in 1997. 1997, 20 years ago, was about where the tight end position became a glorified wide receiver putting up statistics. If you're talking, comparing, that's why when you compare Tony Gonzalez and you talk about the other greatest tight ends of all time, it's all guys from the last 20 years. You bring up Gronk, Antonio Gates, Shannon Sharp. When we start talking linebackers, going to bring up like Dick Butkus and guys like that from back in the day.
Text line 69306. What about Junior Siavie as the best pick by Carl Peterson? We should do like a Jim Rome like segment. Remember that one summer where he just would randomly interview people named Kyle every day? He would see how many different famous people named Kyle he could
interview.
Yeah,
that was really funny for 3 days, and by the fourth day, it was the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
We should do the same thing with like random Chiefs and Royals players. You know what I mean?
Can we get Bob Hamlin, you think? Think we get the hammer on the drive?
That's what I mean. Like,
let's get the hammer on the
drive.
Like,
telling me that, like, you don't want to hear from Junior Siavie? Like, you don't want to hear a Junior Siavie interview this summer? You don't want to hear an Angel Baroa interview this
summer?
Coming
up tomorrow at 3:30 on the drive, Jonathan Baldwin sits down with us in studio.
I just want to know, I just want to know what Snoop Menace is up to.
So like, do I, actually.
Is there a way for us to find what Snoop Menace is up to?
I'm in for a Justin Medlock interview.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, we need to find out if Tamarick Vanover's turned his life around. Can we get Bam Morris on the show? That's what we need to do.
Aren't they in jail?
I think that's going to be a collect call that they're going to have to accept. Absolutely, Speck.
I think Tamarick's on that same level.
There's nothing against bringing a guy on from a prison cell, is there?
I mean, I ain't paying the fees. You paying him? I'm not paying him.
We're huge in Leavenworth, I heard.
I'm not paying. Somebody said Chris Getz. I mean, getting Chris Getz on the show wouldn't really be that hard.
We'll probably do that.
Yeah, we got to just get some, like, random Chiefs and Royals over the summer. Like, throwback Thursday where we just talked to failed Chiefs players.
Jim Eisenreich coming up next on The Drive.
Former second-round pick Chris Wilson on the show at 3:30.
We got Jose Rosado on The Drive coming up.
Two-time All-Star Jose Rosado. You back off that one.
Sean LaChapelle. I mean, what a throwback. I could play this game all day. Let's put a bow on this thing coming up on the other side. It's The Drive. We decided during the commercial break to create a new segment. We just stumbled across it, but we're going to start working on this. I think next week we can actually make this happen. We're just going to, over the summer, on Thursdays, just talk to random former athletes. Like, you're telling me you don't want a Tyler Thigpen art interview this summer?
I do. There's two guys that I really want to hear. I really want to hear Bob Hamlin, because I have no idea what Bob Hamlin's been up to since, I guess, his rookie of the year season, the year of the strike. And I really want to hear from Jerron Rush. I think those would both be fantastic interviews.
I mean, I don't know. Jerron might be a little easier than you think. It might be, you know, might not be that hard to do.
I've tried to get him. He didn't want to come.
Like, someone said Savvy Piscatelli. You guys don't want to hear a Savvy Piscatelli interview in 2018? I'm with it.
Somebody said Hippolito Bichardo. And for any Royals fans that remember who that guy is, pat yourself on the back and then do it again.
Yo, can we make a list of getting Michael Tucker? Michael Tucker used to come out to this mystical song, The Man Right Here, and he was my favorite Royals player. Can we get Michael Tucker on the show?
I once got Michael Tucker's batting gloves thrown to me. I cried the day that he was traded for Jermaine Dye.
We definitely got to find what Emile Brown is up to. The Royals alumni have to have numbers for some of these old guys for us to call and get on the show. They have to have a contact information on Emile Brown.
Wasn't Michael Tucker good friends with Webster back in the day? I'm pretty sure he was. Like, Webster would always come to Kauffman Stadium with Michael Tucker.
I didn't even know this. I've missed out on this.
I feel like I would have known that, because I was a huge Royals fan back in the day and have always loved Webster. That was my viewing. Actually, that and Press Your Luck. If I played hooky at school, I was watching Webster and Press Your Luck. I don't remember him ever coming out to the ballpark with Michael Tucker. I don't know. Maybe it happened. Sounds like a Macaulay Culkin, Michael Jackson situation to me.
You and I were talking about this earlier, and we can have this conversation now. Speck, I don't know if I asked you this or not earlier, but again, we can just do it all right now. What's something we were told as kids about being an adult that once we became an adult figured out wasn't true? Because we all were told like random things as children, and adults like lied to us and made us believe that adulthood was this like very magical thing. And then we became adults and we realized that the adults that cared about us lied to us our entire time. Because I was like thinking about this. We tell kids all the time, man, you know what? If you work hard and do what you're supposed to do, everything will work out. Man, I know a bunch of adults that do that, and life is terrible for them. You know what I mean?
Like, how about dress for the job you want? I came in here the first day with a Paul Pierce jersey. I thought the boss was going to fire me. Like, man, I want to play in the league.
Can I just read this from Royals Review so people don't think I'm crazy?
Yeah, go ahead.
Tucker had a pretty nondescript two seasons in Atlanta where he befriended former child actor Emmanuel Lewis.
Okay, so it did happen.
Yeah.
Weird.
Michael Tucker is friends with Webster.
Man, I mean...
I knew I wasn't crazy.
I mean, you're right. Someone on the text line said Jimmy Gobble. I wouldn't mind having Jimmy Gobble on the show. I wonder what Jimmy Gobble is up to. We got to figure that out. Speck, what is your thing that we were told as kids that whenever we became adults, we realized that the adults lied to us all the time?
Cursive.
Absolutely.
I haven't had to write in cursive since fifth grade.
I'd say most of that stuff that we learned at the elementary school level, cursive handwriting has never been used after third grade. Like extended math, once the numbers got involved with math, it was cool until you're like, wait a minute, what is this T and this X doing here? I thought we were talking about numbers. That type of math you never really use in real life.
They did always tell us, too, when we were kids, you know what? You won't always have a calculator around. Yeah, we will.
Yeah, you will. It's a cell phone.
Our teachers didn't see the future very well at all. Because now, if I need to do math, I never have to do it on my fingers and toes. I can just pull my phone out. I always have a calculator on me whenever I need to have one. Like, all the time. So our teachers lied to us about that. But mm-hmm. You are right. We did spend an entire grade. Not just, like, part of the learning experience. There was, like, an entire grade in our elementary education that was solely about writing in cursive.
Do they still, there's no way they still teach cursive, right? They have to have realized that, okay, we'll teach them this, and then they'll never use
it
again.
I'd also say teaching Latin nowadays is probably a waste of time.
Any teachers out there, 69306, just yes or no, do they still teach cursive? Because I can't imagine they do.
I tell my sister all the time, and this is, I guess, related to language. I tell her all the time that the one class she should pay attention to is Spanish. Think of all the stuff we learned. If you could speak fluid Spanish, you will always be employed. Always be employed. If you were really fluent in Spanish, you could probably make six figures if you really, really want to. You know what I mean? Like, if you really want to, you can make six figures a year if you were really, really fluent in Spanish.
I was told that Latin was going to help me get a good SAT score. I took it for 2 years, and my SAT score was a 1060,
Sean,
and now I'm in radio.
You got to pay more attention to history class. Why? So I can do good with my friends when we're watching Jeopardy together?
Oh, somebody said Ken Harvey. Having Ken Harvey on the show could be great.
I think we could land Ken Harvey.
By the way, yeah. Step Brothers, 62%. Talladega Nights, 38%.
Oh, wow. Can we? We got to figure out a way to get all these people on the show. Like, this is too good of an idea to let die in the 5 o'clock hour of our show.
73% of the people are pressing the non-Philip Rivers button.
Of course. Those people are silly. Why would you press the button for the Hall of Fame quarterback? I don't know why you would do that. I have no clue why you would take Patrick Mahomes being a Hall of Fame quarterback. Back again tomorrow. Check out the podcast page. Also available on iTunes. Sports Machine back again tomorrow. The last day before the holiday. Jimmy Conrad coming on the show tomorrow. Lots happening on the drive.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.